Want to cut cooling bills without cutting comfort? Lower utility costs and enjoy cool and consistent comfort with a highly efficient air conditioner from Luxair. With Luxair's consumer rebate program, educators, nurses, first responders, military personnel, and veterans can enjoy exclusive rebates on qualifying purchases of Luxair equipment. To learn more, call G-Team Mechanical at 765-376-3042 or visit gteamhvac.com. They'll recommend a system tailored to your home that provides comfort, energy savings, and lasting performance.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Well, it was obviously a huge effort by a lot of Pete Townsend was actually a big proponent of something like this. And he and I talked about this a couple years ago. So if this goes bad, we're just going to blame it all on him. So we'll just put that out there right now. But like Mark mentioned, we always want to try something different. We had a great test at Thermal last year. NBC had a broadcast window, which created this opportunity. The Rogers family, the members, our teams have all embraced this challenge. It's going to be a little unique. But really, it's very simple, right? So you got basically qualifying on Saturday afternoon, two groups, 12 minutes. It's going to be the same thing that we've done in the past. So there's nothing different there. And then the two heat races on Sunday morning, basically two different groups, two different heat races, top six advance, or a 12 car, 20 lap shootout with a halftime for a lot of money. What's not to like? It's going to be great.
It's race weekend again, and a very different type of race weekend coming up with the Thermal Million Dollar Challenge. You heard from Jay Fry, the president of IndyCar. Welcome to Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. That's where Elijah Roberson is, downtown in our studios on the Circle with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. We have a lot to get to tonight. Still more to come on the IndyCar opener at St. Pete. What to expect this coming weekend. There's some news. There's some notes. There's some rumors. There's still undetermined drivers and seats for certain weekends this year. We had another thrilling IMSA event over the weekend with, as always, IndyCar drivers as a part of the winning team in these endurance races. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. We'll have the driver that lives in one of the host studios on the program tonight. We didn't have time for him last week. I normally would allow Jackson Lee on the show when he makes the podium, which he did twice at St. Pete, but we had too much stuff going on last week, so he got bumped. But no IndyCar race last weekend, so Jackson will join us at the end of the program. For those that are not interested, we'll let you enjoy the first hour and a half or so before we bring on Jackson to talk about almost winning at St. Petersburg a couple of times and then getting thrown in the deep end with all the seasoned pros in the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge race at Sebring this past weekend, where he ran as high as third for a while and in the top five for a lot of the race. We'll get to that and much more. How are you, Kurt?
I'm great. I'm coming off a busy weekend myself, two rounds of golf at Hilton Head. So, you know, one of those things that has to be done every once in a while. So anything
you're
that
working
comes
too much, working too much.
Well, it's a friend asked me to go and take a Friday night flight and then play golf Saturday and Sunday. By the way, direct flights these days from Indy to Savannah, Georgia. And so you can make that trip. So I did for Saturday and Sunday, flew home first thing Monday morning, got to work about the same time I normally get to work. And so all was well. But anyway,
what airline goes to Savannah, Georgia? Probably
Allegiant,
Southwest.
Allegiant airline. They go direct to Savannah. I know.
I get it.
This was out of my control in terms of the travel arrangements, but I did like it's an hour and 20 minute flight. Direct. It ran on time. Okay. In fact, I'll say this about Allegiant, because they charge for bags to carry on, you can only have a small backpack. Well, because
so
of that, you get on and you get off quicker. It is so fast. And I will say this, when they said they were leaving at 8:03, they were in the air at 8:03. They weren't leaving the gate. They were in the air. So the Friday night was great. The Monday morning first thing was great. And so here we are, ready to talk Sebring a little bit. I didn't watch any of it. So, no, that's not true. I watched the last 10 minutes. I saw the last 10 minutes.
So I'll say we'll get to it coming up the next hour. I had two different people that are hardcore IndyCar fans that have cared nothing about sports cars, but they're not paying more attention, in part because Jackson is an IMSA driver now. And the same response from both is basically, wow, what have I been missing? this stuff is awesome, that they have these long races and it is full contact, body blows at the end of the race. And there are some names that people recognize. If you like road racing, give it a try. Yeah. We'd all like the IndyCar schedule to be longer. And this is what I've been saying for the last 15 years, even before I was working on IMSA broadcasts, is here's something else. Now, I know most of us don't have time for 12 hours, but it's in the background. And catch the end of it. And really, the last hour is when things happen. Now, sometimes things really happen in the middle of the race that becomes significant. But we'll do that later. Let's talk what's coming up this weekend. We are not going to go over the rules and the format because the show would be over. Here's what I'll say. You know, people that are USAC fans, short track fans, you're kind of used to that. And I remember this when, you know, because there's, it's a long list. It's full page of the format. So it kind of reminds me a little bit of Indy 500 qualifying, that there's a lot of things in there. And Kurt, you know this from USAC. The competitors don't even know how the lineup has started. When Jackson was doing USAC quarter midgets and there were passing points, it was just, all right, let's go see the sheet and we'll see where we're starting, because it doesn't necessarily have rhyme or reason. This is not that confusing. If you actually look at it, it makes sense, but you're there to enjoy yourself. Just watch on TV on Sunday at 12:30 on NBC. And I believe there's radio coverage as well. And if there is, it would be here on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan. Just watch and enjoy, and we'll tell you where people are starting.
So I find a lot of similarities to the Firestone Fast Six progression, where there's essentially three rounds. You have straight up qualifying, you'll have heat races, so they're very similar in nature to second round qualifying. And then, you know, in the road races that we go to on a normal basis, you have the Firestone Fast Six. Well, think about this sort of like the Firestone Fast 12. The Fast 12 will then compete for the 20 lap feature race, if you will. And here, I think, is the important thing about the feature race. The feature race is 20 laps. It's going to be stopped in the middle, but you're not going to take tires. So those last 10 laps, you're going to be on used tires to some degree. And so it may be a little more slipping and sliding around. The other thing that happens is you're allowed to put fuel in the car during the halftime break. And the break will be short, like 5 or 10 minutes. But in that halftime break, you can take fuel as much as you want. So fuel strategy, fuel saving will not be a factor in this event. It'll truly be a sprint race. And the other thing is good is you can use up, you'll be starting with 40 seconds of push to pass. You can use up your 40 seconds because at the break, you're going to get another 40 seconds. So you shouldn't have fuel saving. You should have push to pass. And more than likely, you're going to have tires that are going to have some age on them. All those things promote entertainment. And we'll see how that goes.
Agreed. And there's also push to pass in qualifying.
Right.
That is going to be unique. I like what you say about, because that's honestly, that's one of the things that made St. Pete more processional, is there was not tire degradation. And this tire, this isn't Firestone's fault. This tire was designed for a car that was going to weigh about 75 pounds more, if not more than that, than it does right now. It actually is, what, 30 pounds lighter, because they did everything they could to take weight off the car, because the hybrid component was going to add 75 pounds, 50 pounds, something like that. So they wanted to make it as light as possible. And then that's not here. So now the car is lighter than last year. So the tire was designed to be sturdier, both the alternate and the primary. And it just wasn't degrading. And there wasn't that much of a difference between the alternate and the primary, and that's one of the things that make it a challenge. Now, one thing in our favor for this weekend, it'll be interesting to see what happens. We don't know what tire is going to be, but I remember from the test, I was out there last year, that there was talk of it was a high deg track. So probably not as much as there was before, but they also weren't racing, and they weren't doing a lot of long stints. And they do need to, by the way, do that stop, because this is a long track. It's 3 miles or so.
Yeah.
And they would come up just a little bit short. They would not be able to do, you know, it's not as long as Road America. Think of this. Road America is 4 miles, and a stint is on fuel 12 to 15 laps if you're really saving. So I'm going to guess you're talking 18-ish laps, 17 laps, something like that. And even if you could make it on 20, you're right. Let's don't even think about fuel saving. I don't like that word very much. I understand it. I understand why it's part of the strategy. But let's just have a sprint race. It is, I think, a challenging place to pass. And qualifying might be super important. And by the way, all the sessions are going to be on Peacock. The main race is on NBC. And these are long sessions for Friday and Saturday. So even though we're not sure how much overtaking there will be, I will remind all of us that's been said at other tracks before. Barber is one that comes to mind. Nobody will pass there. And we've seen some pretty good races at Barber. And then what's this dynamic like? You don't have to think about points. Top five matters because there's cash involved. And other than that, it doesn't matter. So I know people are concerned about crash damage. And it depends on where you're at in the pecking order of your team. And if you know you're on a one-year contract and an owner that does not accept crash damage, yeah, you might be a little bit careful. But say you've won a decent amount of races and you've got a long-term contract and your owner has the philosophy that, no, we're here to win and we are fine with calculated risks. Those drivers are going to go after it.
Well, the other thing is you just pointed out the top five the top five payouts will be made. And those payouts are pretty significant. $500,000 for the winning car. Then it goes to $350,000 for second, $250,000 for third, $100,000 for fourth, and $50,000 for fifth. Everybody else is going to get $23,000. I say that in that there are more, as we know, more than 10 that we think could be in that top five. If you were just going on talent, experience, results in the past, you're probably talking about 12 to 14 entries that if we sat here and we debated which ones could be in the top five, we'd probably come up with 12 to 14 that theoretically could finish in the top five. And then you look at how they ran at St. Pete, you throw that into the mix. And, you know, maybe ordinarily you wouldn't think, you know, Felix Rosenquist and a brand new partnership with Meyer Shank Racing would be a top five contender or for one of those big paychecks. And the more you think about it, he ran pretty well at St. Pete. So the point is the top, you know, half of the field is all, they're all going to think everybody in that top half of what we consider the field will be gunning for a top five spot. And therefore they're going to be pretty racy.
You know, Felix is an example that I think he's going to be a factor. Andretti was good at tests there last year. And he is now, I think, more than in the past for Meyer Shank Racing in an Andretti car. It's hard to fully verbalize that situation or explain it. But just from what I gathered at St. Pete, not only is Meyer Shank now getting more benefit out of that relationship, Andretti is getting benefit out of the partnership with Meyer Shank. Multiple drivers, I think I mentioned this last week, that brought up, you know, learning from Felix when they had some issues in the practice. And my best guess on this is it comes down to now you have two drivers, and especially one. Tom Blomqvist is still going to be learning, and he's going to do what everybody tells him to do and make the best of it. But Felix Rosenquist has driven for two very good teams with very good resources for both engine manufacturers and driven a ton of other high-level cars. You know, he's been in seven or eight pretty decent championships before he got to IndyCar. My guess is that Elio Castroneves and Simon Pagenaud, Elio certainly, who had spent his entire career with one organization, we're doing it this way, and we want your input, but we're doing it this way. Simon Pagenaud, you know, he was clear on that he liked the opportunity to have a little more say on the direction, where at Team Penske, it's, we want to know what you think, because we think highly of you, but we're kind of doing it this way. So they liked that chance to help lead, but you know what I'm saying, that they probably had an idea of this is the type of car that I'm used to driving. Now, Simon had driven and had won races for another team with Sam Schmidt's team back in the day. And then he'd been in Champ Car, and Elio was way back in the day. So they had other experiences. And then these drivers are, you know, a little bit younger, especially than Elio. So if the cars are good, I think you're going to get a lot out of Felix. So that's just kind of an aside from that standpoint. Let's go back to before the race. What do you think they're doing? Are they just purely setting up for this race, or is this a test session?
I think it depends on when you ask that question. I mean, you're going to have four, to your point, you're going to have four sessions, two Friday, two Saturday, and you're going to have, you know, a total of 9 hours of track time available. You know, I think, you know, as you look at the latter part of the second session each day, you might be focused a little bit on qualifying, just a little bit. And then I think there will be a point in the day, especially, you know, on the second day when the track is going to be similar to race day. Race day, remember, 9:30 is when the action starts on Sunday. And so I think your Saturday morning session might be your kind of more long run, let's pretend like it's a race type of activity. But I think Friday will be a test day. I really do. I don't know why you would focus too much on the Thermal Club weekend as a whole. But, you know, these guys are competitors. They're gonna at some point be dialed into what the racetrack and the event requires of them because they want to win. So I think there'll probably be more thermal based running as the weekend goes, and you'll have more of it maybe than you might expect.
I think towards the end, I think you'll do some qualifying sims, you know, to try to, but that can apply to Barber and IMS potentially and any other road course. But yeah, this is to learn things that you can use throughout the year. And 9 hours, what do you get in a normal weekend? You get, okay, the first session is 1:15, but you're really running for 40 minutes because they don't have enough tires. So I've just sent a text, and maybe, you know, I want to know how many sets of tires they have throughout the weekend. They have to have a lot. They have to have three times what they normally have, or unfortunately, and maybe not. Maybe that's part of the plan, that we've got a 2-hour window, but we know you're only running for 45 minutes to an hour in that. I hope that's not the case. It'll still likely work out okay because they'll just kind of spread it out a little bit. But 2 hours Friday morning at 9 local, so that's noon Eastern. 3 hours at 2 local, so that's 5 o'clock Eastern. So you got Friday night race cars. 2 more hours Saturday morning, 9 to 11. 1 to 3 on Saturday afternoon. And then that's local, Pacific, so 4 o'clock. And then about 5 to 5:40 for the qualifying. So 8 to 8:40 Eastern time on Saturday night. 9:30 local is the start of the race. Race number one on Sunday morning, which is 12:30 Eastern time. So that's a lot of running. Yeah, that's what this is. And then when I kind of looked at it today, who does this matter the most to? Matters to people that have a chance to win $500,000. And I get it. That's not going to the driver. But it's the same thing that we used to deal with the Indy 500. And I'm kind of glad they stopped handing out the big check at the awards ceremony. You know, and people like Connor Daly were pretty honest that, yeah, I'm not getting this. You know, yeah, it's nice to hold a check out here for $252,000, but I'm getting very, very little of this. And it all varies. Sometimes it's 40%. I know this. I remember a driver. This was before I was doing television, that doing radio and PA and other things, I made more money than he did. That month, that he basically drove for meal money, and that sometimes happens. So every deal is different, and this is similar though. So think of it this way: what did you say fifth pays?
50,
I think it's down to third. So third was still
250,
which is what you get for the Indy 500 if you say finish 10th and you're not a full time team. It's really only the top 5 or 6 in the Indy 500 that make more than 350 or now, 350 or something like that. And that goes to the team, but that's all good. So the driver gets whatever, 33%, 40%, 50%. But that means the team team is going to get some money as well. And that's a good thing. So that keeps you on your good graces. So I think it matters to everybody from that standpoint. Let's think of this. There are 12 drivers with new teams this year. And some of them, most of them, have, even after a race weekend, had about 8 hours in the car. When you consider testing with some rain, and then the sessions that you had at St. Pete, and they're going to have 9 hours in the car this weekend. So that's huge for them. They're still trying to get comfortable. And what they're going to learn is going to apply anywhere. Young drivers, all of the rookies. For Colin Brown, this is a huge weekend.
Sure, sure.
He actually has a chance to show what he can do because nobody's been there more than once. Some have not been there at all. It's still going to be tough for him. And if he's ever not last, that's a good day. But I remember saying the same thing a lot of us did about Augustine Canapino last year. And it's no coincidence that he was not last because it was new for everybody else, just like it was new for him. So, this is going to be big for Kyle to kind of show where he's at because he's still auditioning for a job. I saw Dale Coyne at Sebring again this weekend, just like he was at Daytona. And I'm sure he was walking around talking to drivers to ask who has a little bit of budget, because I've got some open seats available for later on. Nolan Siegel, same situation. This is going to be huge for him to get ready for Long Beach. And it applies to Rasmussen, second-year drivers like Stingray Robb and everyone else. How about Callum Ilott? Callum Ilott gets another chance to make his case for next year for Arrow McLaren or another team, or this year as well. Interesting things going on there. I don't know if David Malukas is going to be ready for Long Beach. It's far from certain if he's going to be ready for Long Beach. And Callum Ilott is not available for Long Beach. What I was hearing last week, mid to late week, was Callum Ilott was not going to do the test at Barber because they wanted someone to help get them acclimated that could drive the car at Long Beach, because there was a decent chance of that happening. And then all of a sudden, he's driving the car at Barber. And by the way, it was second fast yesterday in the test. And his teammate Alexander Rossi was fastest. Not everybody was there, but there were 15 cars there at Barber. So maybe they've gotten more positive reports and they feel now that Malukas is going to be ready for Long Beach. Or they couldn't find anybody they really liked and they might just suffer through Long Beach with whoever they put in the car at that point. But they really want to learn something more about Callum Ilott. And I believe his people really were pushing for him to be in the car. You know, proper weekend, long test sessions. Let's find out if this guy can drive your car or not, because St. Pete, after he hadn't done anything other than hybrid testing, which is different in short sessions, traffic and everything, probably isn't a realistic assessment. A long test day at Barber is, and he was second. So there you go. I would just kind of keep an eye on that situation, but Ilott will be one of those that has an opportunity this weekend. And then I would say, you know, teams that need to get better, big for them. And who does that include, Kurt? Everyone but Team Penske?
Everybody but Team Penske, yeah. You know, even Chip Ganassi Racing, which didn't show particularly well in St. Pete, not based on their normal standards, or at least last year's standards. But, mm-hmm. You mentioned Siegel and Colin Brown and Christian Rasmussen, but you've got some other guys too. Kiffin Simpson showed really well, obviously, at St. Pete, but he needs track time. He could appreciate having more time in, a 9-hour session. Linus Lundqvist still acclimating to a new team there. Same team, Pietro Fittipaldi, very new to his organization as well. So, there's a lot. I think there are seven drivers who are new, not just to the series or to their rides, but new to this racetrack, who haven't been to the Thermal Club in terms of an IndyCar. In terms of Malukas, I thought I heard him say over the weekend in St. Petersburg that he wasn't going to be ready for Long Beach. And then I know in your interview with him, he made the comment, or you, I think you said it, that you might be back for Long Beach. I do think there's some question about that.
He said he would not be. That's when he confirmed that he would not be ready for thermal. I can't remember if this is what he told me on the air. I think he told me this off the air, that I just need to have 80% strength. I'm hoping to have 80% strength, and then they will clear me for Long Beach, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't believe he told anyone I'm not going to be ready for Long Beach. I just think it's very uncertain at this point. This was a significant injury. This wasn't just your typical broken bone. The ligament damage, I think, is the bigger concern out of this. Number on tires, 10 sets if you make the finals. So that's pretty good. 7 for the test sessions, an extra set for qualifying, an extra set for the heat race, and then a new set for the final. There are not two compounds. There's just one compound this weekend. I don't know where it falls in. Hopefully more on the alternate side, you know, a little bit softer. A little more tire wear in that will make things, but that might be a little bit risky since this is a high deck track. So you're probably better off just making it, you know, your Barber tire or something like that. Your Barber black sidewell primary.
Do you think it's possible that Malukas has to participate in a certain number of events? Like if he's not ready to go, this is impactful for his future moving forward.
Well, I'll say this. There are, I understand, clauses in many drivers' contracts that say if you miss a certain number of official events, the team has the right to bench you.
That's what I was thinking.
And my guess is he has already surpassed that level. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to do that, but you know, these team, as I've said before, contracts often don't mean a whole lot. And the way you think about it is who had the leverage when this negotiation was going on. If Scott Dixon is signing with Arrow McLaren, he's going to have the leverage. And his manager is going to take over, look at the fine print, and anything that is in question of whether it benefits the team or the driver is going to benefit the driver. You're just going to say, nope, that's what it takes for me to come there. And it is going to be a guaranteed contract. When you are a driver with not as many options and has been asked to pay for your seat in the past years, and I don't know what the financial situation is. I think he was hired, but I don't know that. You know, even though some of these teams you think are always hiring, they're not. And it's just not really talked about. Teams will always take money. Most teams will always take money, but I think he was hired. And in that situation, I've signed contracts like this. I want the job. I'll work on your terms. And most of my contracts basically say, we can kind of fire you anytime you want. We want to, and you just have to say, okay, I'll take that. So from that case, now, do I think they won't give him a chance? No, I think he will get a chance. But we'll see how Callum Island does. And I just hope for Malukas's sake, he gets in the car soon. You know, is he going to be ready for the Indy 500 test? That doesn't take as much. That doesn't take as much. But does he need another procedure at any time? Is he all fully healed? These are things that I do not know. And it's just making it a little bit more challenging. My hope is for him that McLaren is already planning on a fourth car next year. And even if they like Callum Ilott, he's coming in there. Rossi's a free agent. Here's another thing to think of, kind of wandering off topic. I don't know if they can go to a fourth car because of engine leases.
Yeah.
I don't know that, you know, I cannot confirm this with sourcing, but I've had a dozen people in the paddock tell me that I think know what's going on, and this impacts some of these people that have told me that Prima, the sports car team, is going to have two Indy cars next year. They have two Chevy engine leases for next year. So if anyone else wants to expand, it's going to be tough. Honda's generally already full, and now Chevy might be pretty close to full. So if that's coming, are we really doing 29 cars next year in IndyCar? Or is there going to be someone asked to consolidate? And maybe Prima is going to come in as a partner with someone else. That I do not know. But they're coming, and I think they're going to do things pretty first class from everything I understand. And there are some other possibilities that are trying to get in. I don't know if any of those are going to happen next year. You know, the others that we've heard about, like Pratt and Miller, it's probably going to be challenging for Able to get a full program together and the engine lease for next year. I don't think I would think about HMD doing anything unless they, you know, just decide to do a commercial partnership with someone that is an existing team. So, yeah, that's why I bring that up, because if you'd asked me 6 months ago, I would have said McLaren is going to be four cars because they need the space. I also don't see a lot of McLaren sponsors on Romain Grosjean's car. So maybe some of those things fell through and they don't need all of the commercial inventory.
Yeah,
and if they do, they can just keep them on the Hukos Hollinger cars.
So the point about Malukas is I still think that it serves him well to get back. So I'm sure he's pressing as hard as he can.
But don't come back if you're not ready.
Right.
I think I'd advise him, if you're 80% at Long Beach, that's even worse.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened to Oliver Askew. You know, he got dinged. He had what we later learned was concussion-like symptoms. And he's a young guy and he wants to stay in the car. Remember that year with Errol McLaren? I could probably go and look this up and someone else can too. But he was going toe-to-toe with Pato O'Ward. I think he was out-qualifying him at times. He was on pace the first few weekends and then he had that big crash in the GP. And he later said, I just wasn't the same, but he stayed in the car and the results were not as good. And that's kind of the last chance that he had. So better to sit out and come back 100%. Long Beach is unforgiving.
I was just going to say that's the exact word I was going to use. There is no place to hide at Long Beach if you're not 100%. And yep. The demands on your arms and you know, your wrists and it's just and your hands is so demanding. So I agree with you. And I actually, while you were speaking, I thought back to what he said. And I can't quote him specifically where I heard him say there was some confliction on whether or not he could run at thermal. It wasn't Long Beach that he was talking about. There was some feeling who thought he might run. And he said, I'm definitely can't run at thermal. And so
I think I even said that on the air because I didn't chat with him before. And, you know, I think they said, you know, one question, toss it back. And I didn't really get into it. And then after we finished, I asked him and it was like, oh, and he said, yeah, I'm not going to be able to run thermal. And I think I maybe tagged it with, hey, there's still a chance he runs at thermal. And then he said, no, I'm not going to be ready to run at thermal. I'm still hoping for Long Beach.
Yeah.
So there's that. You know, and then speaking of Oliver, I ask you, why isn't he part of the, this is a question for Dale Coyne, and I don't know if he'd want to answer this honestly or not, but why isn't he getting a chance with Dale Coyne? Because Colin Brown's not bringing any budget. This is not George Kurtz funded. This is not CrowdStrike money. This is, I want to see this driver get a chance. If you can go find some, that will increase your chances of doing more events. But I feel pretty confident that he brought his helmet. And I know Oliver doesn't have any backing, but I'd still, now maybe this doesn't do him a whole lot of good because the car's not sorted yet. They're just not there. You know, Jack Harvey's a good driver and they're just going to struggle for a little while. That's why this is a big weekend for them. This is a test session. This is huge for Dale Coyne Racing. It's big for AJ Foyt Racing. They can, you know, use those Penske resources and really try to learn some things this weekend. So,
yeah.
So with that, there's a lot going on. We'll talk more about what's going on this weekend and some of the other things happening. We'll get to some of your Twitter questions coming up at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavan. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside.
Trackside continues. Thanks for staying with us on 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. Back on a Tuesday, back for a two-hour program tonight on the show as we get set for exhibition racing. from the Thermal Club this weekend, Palm Springs, California. Good to be there in the springtime because it won't be 120. I think around 85 or so is the temperature. It'll be comfy on your couch if you are in the neighborhood. I don't know if we ever got to this. There's been a lot going on. It's not $2,000 a ticket anymore. It's pretty similar to what you'd pay for any weekend for a credential with pit passes. It's $500, which actually you normally can't buy, but it's close to that if, say, you have a connection with a team and a team wants to buy a credential with a pit pass, $500. Pit pass, paddock pass, free lunch from the food trucks and other things like that, and not a whole lot of people. So if you're in Southern California, the Palm Springs area, come and join us this weekend for a lot of track activity Friday, Saturday, and then a cash race, cash money race coming up on Sunday, 12:30 on NBC, IndyCar Radio as well. What else from this event needs to be covered before we jump into some other things? I haven't seen the entry list yet, but the only change, I believe, is that Nolan Siegel will be in the... He's in the 18 car.
18, that's right.
So actually, you know, I mean, yeah, Jack Harvey's not going to get a chance this weekend, is he?
No, no. Yeah, when you Jack, I was going to remind you that Nolan will be in the car. By the way, and forecasts are always, you know, dicey to invest in your Las Vegas wagering. But Friday looks like high of 81, so heat as you described. Nice. Saturday drops to 70 for a high, and Sunday... What? Sunday, a high of 66. So really? Palm Springs is decreasing in high temperatures. In fact, Sunday...
Now, are you looking Palm Springs? So the Thermal Club is more in the desert.
Well, we're not going to, you know, let's just go with Palm Springs. I mean, I don't know.
Well, but I'm not going to be in Palm Springs, nor is anyone coming to the racetrack. So I'll look this up in a second. But I believe there is... Thermal. I believe Thermal is a small town.
Looking okay. High of 70 then on Sunday. So
it, oh, that's awesome. That's
the
awesome.
Point is,
I looked a few days ago,
more,
it said 85.
More natural, nice temperatures, which ought to make, if the high temperature is somewhere around 70 for the day, remember, this is a morning race. So it's going to be a little crisp in the morning, which will make good traction and so forth. So, you know, let's just... let's hope for a good race. I think it has a lot of intrigue. I don't even like the word, by the way, exhibition. To me, exhibition is what baseball does in the spring when it's trying to get its pitchers and catchers and outfielders ready to go, and it's playing in a cactus league in Phoenix. But to me, this feels more like I'd rather call it a non-points race because, you know, all-star race. Yeah, it is. It is an all-star race, but. You know, you're going to have all 27 of your car and driver combinations able to make the fast or the final 12. So isn't it really an all-star race? The Marlboro Challenge, which was held from 87 until 92, mostly in the last part of the season, was for race winners, pole winners that year, and the reigning champion. That was an all-star race. This, to me, is a non-points race.
So I did pause for a moment with exhibition, but I also remember seeing that word
I agree.
In the IndyCar release.
No, no.
Because I even thought at one point, because that, like in the NFL, when I worked in the NFL, they didn't want us to call the preseason games exhibitions. They were preseason games, you know, because that feels... Well, they're charging full price for those exhibition games, so they didn't want you to use the word exhibition. So it was preseason games, but I have seen it referred to as an exhibition. Yeah, it's a non-points race. It's a cash race. It's not an all-star race because everybody's invited. You know, in a better scenario, we've said this. I think this could have a little more impact if it were before the season started. If it's we've just been dying to see race cars. But that I don't think was much of an option this year because they needed all the time. They were trying to have the hybrids ready for the season opener, and they needed all the time they could get. So maybe that is something that happens. And then the other aspect of it is, well, we needed to fill a gap. And this has been a lifesaver once Texas fell through. They were hoping to have something at Texas Motor Speedway. That didn't happen. There was nothing available there. One of the reasons is SMI is the promoter for NASCAR at COTA. So this NASCAR race this weekend at COTA, the Texas Motor Speedway staff is doing that. So they are not going to be, this weekend was not going to happen. Maybe you could do it next weekend, but I think there were some other things that just didn't work out. So this filled a gap, because otherwise you would be going from, you'd be going 6 weeks, right? From St. Pete to Long Beach without any kind of racing. And it's going to turn out to be not all that bad, because you have this, and then you're going to have, it's at the end of this month. Is it next week when they're on the road course at IMS for hybrid testing?
It is.
That's not a fan event. It's not on TV. But then April 10th and 11th is the Indy 500 test. And you might see something broadcast of that. Has there been a release on that?
No.
So maybe not. I don't know. Wait till a release comes out. But I'll say this. Haven't we done that in the past?
It is.
I believe we've done that in the past. So stand by for information on that front. But there are some things happening before we go to Long Beach, and it's going to be relatively busy.
And I think the most important thing about the weekend, you add all those things that are important, filling gaps, you know, so forth, giving more track time, having an open test, which they didn't have a full open test before St. Petersburg. But what you have is another NBC race. That's huge for the sports ecosystem. So having NBC, I mean, this is not a Peacock-only event. This is not, you know, anywhere else, just a viewership, you know, gap filler. This is NBC, and that's huge. And I think, all things considered, you know, at first I was thinking, well, you're going to run at 12:30. How does that impact the West Coast? But you, the 12:30 on this particular Sunday means you are getting started and staging your race, perhaps even, you know, securing some people who wouldn't have been watching otherwise before the NCAA tournament kind of gets rolling Sunday afternoon. You know, you're going to have a game that
what
starts.
What time do those games start? Don't they start at 12:40?
12:40, something like that. So what I'm saying is, if somebody happens to be on NBC and they get started with it, you got a better chance of keeping them.
Yeah, and it's not every game going on. There's only one game, and you know, after you've watched a full day of basketball and your bracket is busted on
three full days,
people lose interest once their bracket goes away. So yeah, it's going to impact things. Everything impacts things. You know, I actually guessed the rating pretty well from St. Pete. I said I think probably about 1 million. Because they were going head-to-head with Caitlin Clark, who is the biggest sports star in America right now, isn't she? Pretty close to it. She's about as recognizable as Stephen Curry, as LeBron James, as anybody else at
the
moment.
Maybe not quite as much, yeah.
Pretty close. She's pretty big. She's getting 3 to 4 million people a view at this point. So anyway, that's coming up this weekend. What else? I want to answer just a couple of Twitter questions. Actually, let's do that coming up in the next segment. So let's roll through a few Twitter questions and not make the next segment quite so short. So we'll do that and more next. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Alex Palou, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, let's check in with the Xbox, the Twitter inbox at Kevin Lee 23, at Kurt Cavan. Not Michael Andretti, at Cocky Andretti asks, has the Thermal Club track had any work done since last season's testing? I know they had issues with dust when cars went off track last year.
Well, I don't know how you handle the dust situation. I mean, it is going to be dusty. It just is. There, you know, you can sweep it and you can, it's dusty.
Maybe you water it down. Maybe you put some water down.
It's still going
to
be,
keep the
gonna
dust
be dustier
down
than most places. So they've put in some new tire barriers. There will be some modifications that have been made. Tony Kottmann has been out there numerous times. He's out there today, as a matter of fact, overseeing the track. He's obviously a FIA-approved steward. In terms of the circuits, and it'll be good.
Paul asks, the race at St. Pete should have been more exciting than it was. Do you think IndyCar should mandate a number of fuel stops so the drivers can push and make it more of a spectacle? I'm not a fan of mandating fuel stops. I think strategy should always play into it. I'll go back to what I suggested last week. And then I listened over the weekend to the Hinch and Rossi podcast. Hinch had the same thought. And I don't think we've ever even really talked about this offline. But my idea was just adjusting the fuel bladder. You know, they basically put a tennis ball in these fuel tanks that can make it less than 18 and a half gallons to make it, you know, that definitely happens all the time in IMSA, because balance of performance, that's what they do. They take away your fuel capacity if your car is getting too much fuel mileage.
So I asked Bill Pappas, who's the vice president of engineering, had dinner with him last week. And I said, hey, by the way, it came up on Trackside. He goes, yeah, I heard it. And I said, can you adjust the size of the fuel bladder? And he said, no. He goes, there's a long list of reasons why that can't happen, but we cannot adjust that. I went, okay. So
does he mean you can't adjust it like on a week-to-week basis, or?
The size is the size. And so I can't give you the technical details. Perhaps we should have him on the show one day and just say, explain some of these things to us, why it happens the way it does. But he can't do it.
They do that in IMSA every week. And I just learned one thing that happened to a team recently is the little thing that you put in there. A team ran out of fuel during a race when they didn't think they should run out of fuel. And what happened is the little ball they put in there was actually sucking up some of the fuel. So they had even less fuel than they thought they should have had. So things like that can happen. Now, along those lines, this question came in. Frank said, you said it'd be cool to see more pit stops to make racing better. Let me disagree. Longer stints require tire management from the driver. You can make 1 to 3 stops. Bring back 40-gallon tanks. So he's saying less pit stops, more tire deg. I hear you. More tire deg is good, but a lot of our action comes from pit. I find pit stops interesting. I think people like pit stops.
Me too.
You've spent a lot of money, and you've worked hard for these people to come in and be able to do pit stops and separate themselves. And it's a team sport. And if we go down to one pit stop, I don't know.
Our best action at St. Pete was Joseph leaving the pits and trying to get out amid Pato O'Ward and Colton Herta and Felix Rosenquist.
So if we can't adjust the size of the fuel capacity, then we need to try to make a bigger disparity between the two tire compounds. Need to make it where you cannot do a full stint on the alternates unless you found something magic in the setup. And then that will create some overtake. Now, the problem is if you go too far, then everybody only runs them one stint. So I get it. It's not an easy answer for Firestone. They want to make them close enough to where it's uncertain. So you can't have a huge gap because then everyone runs them for just a few laps. And, you know, as soon as a caution comes out, if a caution comes out 2 laps into the stint, they get rid of them and everybody's on the same tire the rest of the race. But that's why that works. Having multiple tire compounds definitely helps in that regard. So, okay. More of your questions are coming up. We're going to talk about Sebring a little bit. We got a lot of other things to get to in IndyCar, Indy 500, and other stuff on the way. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Helio Castroneves, and you're listening to Trackside.
Number 112 hours at Sebring is won by WTR Andretti, and Louis Delatraz sees that checkered flag first. The Dex imaging machine is victorious with Louis Delatraz, Colton Herta, and Jordan Taylor.
Hour 2, thanks for staying with us. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. Highlights from NBC Sports. From the Mobile One 12 hours of Sebring Saturday, another really classic event. If you did not get a chance to watch, one thing I would recommend is NBC always does. They do this for IndyCar as well on the NBC Motorsports YouTube page. Do a Google search. You can find that. Same kind of thing, Kurt, that we've seen that I think IndyCar puts their own together, the race in 30 minutes. NBC does the same thing, that maybe it's even in 15 or 16 minutes for IndyCar races. I think they do them for NASCAR races and for the sports car races as well. It's very handy if, say, you're a broadcaster and we review last year's race coming into the next race. A little bit challenging to do that when it's a 24-hour and a 12-hour race and you had another event the previous weekend. But you can at least get the highlights in 30 minutes or so of the previous event. And we have that from this past weekend. So 12-hour race, Sebring is so unique because it finishes in the dark. The race started earlier this year. It started at 9:40 local time, Eastern time. So that means only about an hour and 45 minutes of darkness instead of sometimes, you know, 2:15, 2:45, depending on when it starts. And I think everybody feels like, yeah, that's plenty, because 3 or 4 hours in the dark there is just treacherous. It's not lit like Daytona is, where you can see a lot of things. IMS has some natural lighting. We saw the Michelin Pilot Race in the dark last year. Sebring, you have no idea where the track is. And if you happen to be leading, it's muscle memory and just knowing, all right, I'm going to need to turn here in about 3 seconds, and you'll see it when you need to see it. And these prototype cars are going almost as quick as an Indy car. So it can be frightening. Big moments from the race. You know, one of the big stars in sports cars is Pippo Durrani, who did a little bit of junior formula car racing. And he's you know, kind of like an Elio, just a really good personality. Some of the other drivers, I'm not saying this is compared to Elio, but some of the other drivers don't like him. They thought as he was younger, he was a little bit too aggressive, but he's really good. He's really fast. He's won a couple of championships. He's won Sebring 4 times and won the pole, was leading the race. And this was midway through, slight contact with a slower GTD car and a frightening crash straight into the tires, upside down. He's trapped in the car. Luckily, we knew that he was okay, but just kind of a frightening moment. That took out one of the contenders. The Porsche Penske team was always in the mix. The Ganassi Cadillac team with Bourdais and Dixon was a factor. They had an oil leak, and that cost them some time early, but they were still leading the race late. And it came down to the Wayne Taylor Andretti team. And on that new Andretti team, their second car, Colton Herta is a part of that. He had a monster stint, the next to the last stint that kept them in contention, running second or third, Jordan Taylor. And then Louis Delatraz is relatively new. This is his first full-time year. He's going to be a superstar in sports car racing, kind of showed it. He passed Sebastian Bourdais in a good car at the end of the race with 8 minutes left to win the race. Massive story. Michael was there, super happy. Wayne Taylor, who didn't win a race last year, big deal there. So that was the top class. Bourdais, part of his team, he and Dixon finished second. Dixon still not won Sebring and came close, was within 8 minutes of getting it done, and played a major role, as he always does in this one. The Penske Porsche team finished third. The Rahal BMW team finished fourth. Jack Hawksworth is a beast. So he won the pole, had a penalty for a crew guy, lost his radio and didn't get out of the way when he was exiting the pit. So he bumped him, stopped, but gets a drive-through. You know, in a 12-hour race, you can kind of overcome that. But he's running behind the Ferrari late in the race, and he passed two pretty much in one corner in the dark to go to the lead and wins again. Kyle Kirkwood was a part of that winner. Ben Barnicote, who's really, really good. You know, Jack Hawksworth is one of those guys. If he had been in a better situation, he'd be winning races and would have been winning races for the last 8 years in IndyCar.
I remember that race at on the road course at IMS. Qualifies on the front row, just looked great. You know, and you know, the other thing that struck me, I hadn't seen him for a couple of years. Saw him last year at the Speedway when the road course race was held, the IMSA WeatherTech sports car race. He has filled out. He
big,
looks
strong guy, isn't he?
He's a big, strong, strapping guy, and just as nice and as humble as they could be. I've always liked Jack Hawksworth. You talk about somebody that deserved better fate. Now, he would tell you, hey, I got a chance. I got a chance. Let's don't. Other people have not been so fortunate, but that just speaks to the kind of person he is, too.
And he's doing fine, and he's doing better than many, you know, and this is kind of what we've been looking at in our own household. And I'm not comparing Jackson to Jack Hawksworth. You know, Jackson's only chance to get to IndyCar is he was going to have to be Kyle Kirkwood. We don't have the budget to do it. He was going to need to win a massive amount of races, but an awful lot of drivers find out. And we were advised, hey, you need to move to sports cars before it's too late, because you're going to have to pay a little bit to get started. Prices will go down. And if you're any good at it, you will soon be making money doing sports cars. And Jack Hawksworth is a Lexus driver. and is, by the way, driving in the NASCAR truck race this weekend in a Toyota. He did an Xfinity race a few years ago at Mid-Ohio and almost won the thing. He'll be a story to watch this weekend. But there are opportunities. There are more of them. And you have a longer shelf life in sports cars, and you can do quite well. If you're a top six or seven driver in IndyCar, yes, you're going to make more money. But for everybody else, sports car drivers are doing just as well, if not better, and they have a little longer career. And in LMP2, Connor Zilich finished the race. So Connor Zilich is driving everything. He's winning MX5 Cup races. He's going to be in the NASCAR Xfinity race this weekend. He was signed by, is it Trackhouse, I think, as a development driver. He's 17 years old still, and he is really, really good. He's driving everything, and he was the finishing driver to win the LMP2 race. Hunter McElroy, Indy Next driver, won four races, getting a chance at LMP2. I was happy to get Hunter on the air, interview him, and because he did his job. He passed for the lead fairly late in the race. His team finished second in LMP2. So those are some of the others. Ernie Francis. People have asked before what happened to Ernie Francis once he lost the opportunity with Force Indy and Penske Entertainment. He's driving a Super Trofeo Lamborghini. This is a very fast, proper race car that has kind of attributes to a formula car. He won over the weekend. So good for Ernie Francis Jr. I know he did a Trans Am race a couple of weeks ago as well. Kiko Porto, who won a USF 2000 championship and I think finished second in Pro 2000. He won one of the other races with Nico Jamin, who people might remember from Indy Lights over the weekend. So yeah, lots of stuff happening there. I wanted to mention this too. So we have all kinds of road racing going on this weekend. And, you know, you've got Formula One, which out on the West Coast, the Australian race is going to start at 9 o'clock Saturday night, my time. I might get to watch that other than the fact that I think we'll need to be at the track at 6 a.m. West Coast time for a 9:30 local time start. But I'm kind of looking forward to that. So you got Formula One with the Australian Grand Prix. And at COTA, here's some of the people that we're interested in the road course there. In the Cup Series, A.J. Allmendinger is going to be running. Shane Van Gisbergen, he's running Xfinity full-time, but he's doing Cup, and we know he'll be good. And Kamui Kobayashi, former Formula One driver, really entertaining in the sports car races that we've seen. He's going to be in a car in the Xfinity race. This was just announced today. RC Enerson is going to be driving for Greenlight Racing. I do not know if this impacts the budget he has for an Indy 500 program. I will circle back to that. That's not a big surprise. I chatted with RC last weekend at St. Pete, and he told me I'm thinking about some NASCAR stuff. I've got some good opportunities. It's a pretty good budget to do that because he's a solid road course racer. Kyle Larson will be in the Xfinity race as well. He's an IndyCar driver, right? He's driven an Indy car. He'll be in the Indy 500. Ed Jones is doing the Xfinity race, and Sage Karam does a lot of Xfinity races. And in the truck race, Jack Hawksworth is in the number one car. Marco Andretti is going to be there. I mentioned Connor Zilich as well. So that's some of the other things happening. Now to RC Enerson. That is one of the uncertainties. That Able car is one of the uncertainties. So I guess I'll phrase what I'm going to say here from a few different perspectives. So I've talked to Bill Abel. I've talked to John Brunner. I've talked to RC Enerson. I've talked to Devlin DeFrancesco all in the past weekend. What I'm saying is not necessarily going to come from them. It's going to come from also other people. And some of it's just my opinion and my opinion of what's going to happen. Some other names that I think are in play for this last seat, RC is still very much in play. I know he said, I need a primary sponsor to get that done. And I think there are some other drivers that might have a little more budget. But the easiest scenario for Able Motorsports is to have RC Enerson in the car because that car is mostly ready. That car, I believe, is only going to run if RC Enerson is driving it. It is owned by the Enerson family. If RC Enerson is not driving it, a car that is in boxes right now in the Able shop that is not fully put together will need to be assembled to run one of the other drivers. That could be a Devlin DeFrancesco. It could be Benjamin Peterson. It could be Stefan Wilson. It could be Oriel Servia. It could be, I think there are a couple of other players potentially involved there that have budget, that have ability. And then it comes down to these other entities are going to want to know, I think, what's this program going to be and what are our chances? Because the car's not put together. And everybody always says the car needs to be massaged and everything else. One, can we be ready in time for the open test? That's part one. So I still do not know which way this is going to go. I believe if Devlin DeFrancesco wanted this seat, he could have this seat. But this is back to my opinion. If I'm Devlin DeFrancesco, you know, you're going to have to provide the budget for this. And since it's, I think, the only seat left, I talked to Catherine Legg. She said, I have not signed anything, but I believe she's going to be in the Dale Coyne car. She's going to be in one of those cars, and I think it might be for more races. So it's very fair to say she is the leading candidate for that one. So this is the only seat that still is available. So and $1.5 million is often asked. Is a going rate, you know, 800,000-900,000 minimum, but I think you're going to be looking at the high end because somebody is going to want to be in the race. But then you're going to ask the other hand, well, two are not going to make it. And if we're putting this new program together, I want to know, who's your chief mechanic? Who's crew in the car? Who's the engineer? Where are we? Are we going to make this test? Is the car going to be properly assembled? And it's possible that someone is going to say, you know what? We're going to just hang on to our budget and do some other things and start working on next year. And I think that's kind of the situation, one for DeFrancesco, I would imagine for Peterson as well. You know, for Devlin, he's had, what, did he have 3 years in Andretti? Maybe it was just two.
I think just two.
Just two. He wants to make the next situation work. It is not good for Devlin's career to come in and not make the race, even if it's not his fault, or not do well. So if I'm them, there's no guarantee you're going to make the race. I just want a little more assertion that, all right, this is going to be a proper program and we're going to have a good chance. So all that I'm saying is I still don't know who's going to be in that car. You know, I'd put it kind of 33 to 50% on RC Enerson, 25% on DeFrancesco. I've not seen Benjamin Peterson other than I saw him at St. Pete and I said hello. But I know he's getting asked all the time and I said, you know, I'm not going to bug him on that. Same question. If he wants to, and I noticed no one else has written anything about it. And I'm sure other journalists have asked him. So they're just not talking at this point. So there's your Indy 500 update. Unfortunately, there's nothing definitive, but just telling you, there's still a chance that there are other people involved out there. And I think that car will run. I think we're going to have 35.
Keep in mind.
A car will run. I don't know which one.
You mentioned it earlier, but get your popcorn ready. April 10th and 11th on the road course or on the oval at Indianapolis. So that'll be a telling test. It'll be a big day for Kyle Larson. And as we've talked about, ticket sales are going really well, and I don't think really the Kyle Larson effect has taken place yet. We're going to find out once he performs in that open test. You know, we're going to see how the ticket interest goes, and it's already going very well, so we'll see.
Yep. We had an announcement today. Carb Day Band. People are always asking that. I've gotten tweets. Hey, ask Kurt to tell us who the Carb Day Band is.
George Thorogood.
He'll tell you who the Carb Day Band is ahead of the announcement when he's decided he doesn't want to work there anymore. That's how that works. And I'll admit, I saw that and I said, oh, cool. I like George Thorogood. And then it crushes me when I see our man Nathan Brown of the Indianapolis Star post on Twitter, I've never heard of George Thorogood. And it reminds me we're getting old. And Nathan is younger than us. And the 20-somethings and the 30-somethings. Now, Nathan did say, you know, I looked it up and I recognized the songs. But I think George Thorogood is one of those fun kind of bands. But I get it. And it just goes back to you cannot please anywhere close to everybody. And they're kind of trying. So they've got that group from the 70s and 80s. You know, I was in college in the 90s and Thorogood was still big. even though he hadn't had a hit in 15 years. And I kind of suspect that's still the case at parties. The gin blossoms is for what, the 90s and 2000s generations. And I have no idea who Kid Quill is.
Yeah,
but
me
I'm going to guess maybe my kids do. So I need to text Savannah. Jackson's out of the loop. He doesn't know anything. But Savannah would be able to tell me if Kid Quill is somebody in that frame. So they're a fun band. You know, whatever. I'm there to see the race cars and plenty of other stuff going on that weekend. But yeah, there you have it. Now we know what's happening on Carb Day. What else? I wanted to sneak in a couple of other Twitter questions. Richard Big Cats Struth says, is Diffie going to announce NASCAR at the end of the season? And is Kevin taking his place? I will understand if you can't say anything until later in the year. It was going around online and on Twitter last week. I would say you need to ask Adam Stern of Sports Business Journal. So I have not seen any kind of press release from NBC announcing what Lee Diffie is doing later in the year. I did read the story, and as I've always said, I will report credible reports, probably not with a lot of comment. I've not been told by my bosses anything on this regard. I have not seen any kind of internal announcements. So I will wait for Adam Stern to tell me what my assignment is for the end of the year. How about that? How about that?
I figured I'm
going to thermal this weekend with the diff.
I figured it would come up tonight, but I wasn't going to press you with the question, but I figure you'll find out before the race starts.
As I've always told them, I am happy wherever you put me. I really enjoy being on pit road. I love being in the action. I enjoy the booth because, frankly, it's a cushier job and it's fun. I like calling play-by-play, but whatever. I'm not digging ditches. You put me wherever you want, and I'm quite content. And here's the news on television rights. Front Office Sports posted this, the latest news, quotes from Mark Miles, Penske Entertainment CEO. We would weigh reach above all else, but we expect to get some kind of increase in our rights fees. And then the story says NBC is interested in returning, but plenty of other parties have inquired. Initially, there were several platforms that we had great discussions with. This is back to a quote. Initially, there were several platforms that we had great discussions with, kind of did a roadshow to get in front of them, Miles explains. Not in a quote. Fox Sports in particular has proved to be a strong contender, the story says. Back to the quote. They were interested when we made our last NBC deal, so this is not a newfound interest. They like motorsports, end quote. IndyCar would prefer to end up with one media partner, the story says, rather than splitting its rights across multiple broadcasters, says Miles. He confirmed IndyCar had conversations with more than three of what he called major disruptive streamers, but he said it would be a stretch to end up with both the traditional broadcaster and streamer for this deal. Now negotiations are shifting from logistics to economics, and Miles says the field of suitors is narrowing some. A conservative deadline in Miles' mind is having a completed deal by the Indianapolis 500. I don't see it exceeding that, Miles says. So what I read from this is it's down to Fox and NBC is what I, and this is another one. No one I work for has told me anything. I know I've read some things that says it's going to Fox. My opinion is I don't believe it's a done deal yet, but I will, again, probably find out from Adam Stern before I find out anywhere else. So I'll keep the Twitter inbox open or the Xbox for that as well.
There I agree you with you. Same on my front. I've not heard anything internally. All I've read is Adam Stern in that respect and heard from a few journalists who believe they have the story but can't write it. So they don't have any sourcing, so I don't know how they have the story based on the standards that I know to be in place for most journalists. But the point is, I don't believe it's a done deal either.
So that was news in there to me because I had wondered if it might be split, if that might be a way to find more revenue, that you need to be on network for the Indy 500 and for your teams as much as possible. But what if one of these networks wasn't offering you a lot of network? And then it's, well, let's just then find the best revenue deal we can. Let's take cash. And that might be from a streamer. So might you do a split with network and then the other Apple TV or Amazon Prime or the CW or something like that? But according to this, it sounds like that is unlikely. and they are looking at one partner. Now, maybe that's just a preference because we've gone to that before. The problem there is, does the one partner promote the other partner when the race is there the next weekend and vice versa? And you're confusing your fans a little bit, and NASCAR is going to deal with that next year. The NASCAR fan is going to be confused, and the older generation, which might be our generation, but certainly older than us, is going to offer frustration about not being able to figure out where the race is on that particular weekend. And if you're in one family of networks, you got a better chance of people being able to find it. So
especially, when the option is a streaming option. And I heard this just a couple weeks ago with the Purdue game. Where is the Purdue game? It was on Peacock. So there you go.
It's getting better, you know, each time. People are getting more used to finding that, but there are just some people that are not going to go that effort. And then you lose the casual fan. And that's what network gives you. It gives you the opportunity to reel in the channel clicker, the casual fan, person watching the event before you. There's no lead-in when you're talking streaming. It is, you have to go and search out and find it. We'll see what we missed coming up in whatever time is available. And our in-house driver, we save this for the end. We get all the good stuff out. Hopefully you find this good stuff. We'll talk to Jackson Lee about his IMSA experience at Sebring and coming really close to winning at St. Pete the weekend before last, next on Trackside.
Hi, this is Felix Rosenquist, and you're listening to Trackside.
So we've talked about IndyCar. We've talked about the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring. And we happen to have someone here in the house that was in the number two event at Sebring this past weekend. It's essentially their Indy Lights, Indy Next, the top support series. And a lot of drivers, more so than Indy Lights or Indy Next, you never see one of those drivers compete in the IndyCar race over the weekend. But in IMSA, you do see drivers that are competing in Michelin Pilot Challenge and then the WeatherTech Series and GT4 and GT3 cars. Jackson Lee joins us. And as I mentioned earlier, normally podiums would get you an appearance on the show hosted by someone in your house. But last week, we were busy. We had IndyCar opening weekend. We only had an hour. So sorry, son, but you got bumped. But we had no IndyCar race this past weekend. And you've had three races now, including your first step up really in the big leagues. So we welcome Jackson Lee to the program, who has driven two different types of cars in two different series in the last 2 weeks. We'll go in order. Let's go back to St. Petersburg, the IndyCar weekend in IMSA VP Racing Sports Car Challenge with a new team, not the team you raced for in Daytona, Vandersteur Racing with an Aston Martin, and you finished second in both races. First, the difference from running a formula car in either USF 2000 and USF Pro 2000 to driving an Aston Martin GT4 on a street course there.
Yeah, I've obviously gotten the opportunity to do both, drive in the USF Pro Championships and in the Aston Martin GT4 car at St. Pete. And they're so different. It's almost like a completely different racetrack. There are certain corners at St. Pete that weren't really considered corners in the formula car, whereas in a sports car, they're legitimate corners and something you have to really put some focus into. Some places like the 2-3 section, the real tight section where IndyCar had that big crash at the start of the race last year, is pretty high commitment and tricky in the sports car, as well as like the kink over by the bay and the chicane leading on into the last section of the track are all very tricky in the sports car, and getting to figure that out, it was a challenge, but it's still a ton of fun. And really, I just enjoy going to St. Pete. It's just such a cool event every year, and I'm just super happy I got the opportunity to drive a car around the streets of St. Petersburg again.
So I'll tell people that this series that Jackson is in is kind of the third step in IMSA, and last year was the first year of a new format with LMP3 cars, prototypes, and GT4 cars. And honestly, there were mostly gentlemen drivers, meaning amateurs, guys my age driving. And there was one kid, and he won the championship. And then there was another driver who was in his mid to late 20s who had some experience. Those were the top two. And this year, I think some other people saw opportunities that, hey, we can win some races and come in there. And teams are also putting pros in there to develop the car. So there are five or six really legit drivers in his class. And I didn't know how it would go. What was your expectation coming into the weekend with, by the way, a car that you had never sat in until right before the first practice?
Yeah, I really had no expectations for the weekend. Obviously, the Michelin Pilot Challenge was not there, so I wasn't entirely sure what the competition was going to look like, but it still ended up being pretty stiff. There were some good drivers who showed up and made us work for it. But we came out of the box pretty strong. The Vandersteer Aston Martin was very good. There wasn't a whole lot that needed to happen to make that car go quick. And it was just a matter of reacclimating with the street circuit and just going to work. And it was a ton of fun. And as I said earlier, just driving laps around St. Pete is just a ton of fun. It's a very tricky course, but it's high commitment. It's got a little bit of everything for a sports car, whereas in the formula car, it's a lot of just sort of stop and go corners. And it was just an all around great weekend, and being able to put the car on the podium at the end of it really kind of sealed the deal for the weekend, making it an enjoyable start to the year.
Race one, you qualified second, just missed pole, dropped a spot at the start of the race, and then passed a really well-regarded young driver, Luca Mars, and then it was kind of a two-man race until a late caution. He come up just a little bit short there behind Jesse Lazar. I think 1, 2, 3 finished all together. Race two, I still haven't had time to watch the broadcast yet. You took the lead at the start. How did you get the lead at the start on Lazar?
Well, the thing about St. Pete is you really have to play to the track. And the front straight at St. Pete is an active runway for the Albert Whitted Airport, which means it's got painted lines on it for the actual airport runway, along with the racing line, obviously, having more grip where the rubber's laid down and marbles being thrown offline. So when you go low into turn one, there's significantly less grip than up top. So I knew that coming into the start and was able to pop out wide and use the grip on the outside to be able to run the outside and take the lead into turn one. And then from there, we were just able to drive away with it a little bit. When unfortunately a couple of yellows came out and really kept me from, holding that lead, but it was just a matter of partially knowing the experience of how to go quick around this track and where the grip is. From my years in the past, I had known there was going to be plenty of grip up there and I had plenty of confidence to break deep and take the lead early.
And you hung on through a couple of restarts with some challenges side by side. And then the guy behind you who's won the Rolex 24, Jesse Lazar, and is really good, really experienced, got you on the final restart with a few minutes left. What did you learn from that you can take moving forward?
Really, it's tough to put into words on what exactly I've learned from that experience. Really, it's just, I need more experience doing restarts and getting in situations like that in this new style of racing. Part of it was the two classes, which is which I'm not familiar with. Being the second class, I had to figure out how exactly I wanted to play to where the lead class was, and play my gap right so that I'm not catching them at the wrong time, and able to get on it at the right point. And just really having experience of being able to get the power down properly without really losing any traction. So it was a tricky restart where I lost the lead just because of just the timing of when the green came out and just a little more experience. I think I could have avoided that. And then a little contact that I think could have been avoided as well. But
you're politely saying you got the side horn. That's okay. I'll say it for you. And that's experience. Robin is racing, yeah, Especially in sports cars.
Yeah, but we learn and we move on. Yep. This is my second race in a sports car of hopefully many more. So we'll go back at it next time and we'll have a better mindset of what needs to happen.
Well, it was a great weekend. And then you go on to Sebring this past weekend and you step up where there's not just 5 or 6 pro level drivers. There's, I don't know, 35, something like that. There are 26 cars in class. And in Pilot Challenge, there really are no requirements. You don't have to have a bronze and a silver or a silver and a gold. And they don't even list the ratings. You just can't be platinum. And there are some teams that have 2 pro drivers. There are a few that have 2 very amateur drivers. Most have a pro and an am, and the am is paying for the whole thing is kind of how that works, and the pro is being paid. And then there's in between, like your team. Your team has two cars, Saabok Simpson Motorsport, with four young drivers, and all pretty much running very similar lap times. So your teammate Gordon Scully qualifies the car. So let's kind of get into this situation. Where is your team at this point in the season?
Yeah, well, obviously we're a new team, so there's a lot of challenges that come with that. And just in the experience of what we know and what we don't know, I've been on track for two weekends with the team, and the team has been on track on two weekends. So there's just a lot of very limited experience with learning the new car, the Porsche Cayman that we are running the year with, and just learning the events and whatnot. And each time we're on track, we're continuing to develop our programs. Us as the drivers, we're continuing to get better. So it's a work in progress. Each time we go out, we're going to continue to build. This weekend was for sure a good learning experience for me, but I feel like it's pretty comparable to, say, a Division I basketball player going up and doing his first NBA scrimmage and really getting an idea of what it's like to play with the big boys, because there are definitely some very talented drivers in this field, and learning how to defend properly and how to run with these guys, it was challenging, and we definitely have a long way to go, but there was a lot of positive to take away. I think we showed some decent pace at times, but we were able to compete and run in the top three at times, as well as sort of mix it in with some of the really good drivers. So we're going to continue to build on what we have and continue to move forward.
So you were the second driver. Gordon did the first stint. And then under a caution, 40 minutes is minimum drive time. He gets out. You get in. You guys have cycled to the back. So you're 35th on the restart, because the slower TCR cars haven't pitted yet. They're in front of you. And I think 23rd in class. Two really short stints, not even a full lap. Maybe you pick up a couple of spots. And then your strategist, Steven Simpson, people remember Steven. He made it up to Indy Lights. He's won big sports car races in the top class before. And he's the reason why we're with that team, because we trust in Steven Simpson's coaching and in this entire program that they're going to figure it out really soon. He pulled a Dale Coyne. IndyCar fans will know that. He was smarter than everybody else. He could tell that there was a good chance a caution was coming out with a car wobbling. You duck in the pits, you top off, and then all of a sudden you come out third with a bunch of beasts right behind you. So I don't know what the driver is thinking, but the dad was thinking, this is like a test session weekend, and it's going to be fine if we run 20th all weekend, because everybody is learning. You come out third, you can't hide. What are you thinking there when there's an Aston Martin factory driver right behind you? Who, luckily, Robin Liddell was right in front of you, because I had warned you that you might want to just move if he comes up, because he's coming through no matter what. You know, you have Robbie Foley, you have any one of a number of guys that people have heard of, Robert McGinnis, so on and so forth. What are you thinking at that point?
Well, I didn't know at the time I had an Aston Martin factory driver behind me, or really wasn't paying attention to who was around me at that point. I knew I had two cars in front of me and a lot of cars behind me who wanted to be in front of me. And that's sort of my mindset to every restart. Obviously, if you've been in a series for a while, you get to know some people. And I know all these people are very talented, but I'm not entirely familiar with their specific racing tendencies yet. So really, I'm just trying to go out and do the best I can with what I have and try and make up spots as I can, try and hold on to spots where I can. And really not worrying about it a whole lot. I feel like I've been able to do a pretty good job of separating any sort of distractions from the reality of the situation, which is we're in a motor race, and there's just people in race cars, regardless of their experience. You got to just try and do the best with what you have.
One of the guys that you held off for a little while, you wouldn't know who he was, but maybe you've seen it. He was the guy who played Dale Earnhardt Jr. in that ESPN movie 15 or 20 years ago. His name is Chad McCombie. He's a really good driver. He's driven in NASCAR, and he's a really good sports car driver. So that was one of the guys that you were dealing with. You held on third for a lap, fourth for a lap, and you were still in the top eight, 40 minutes or so into your stint. And then I think that the tires were probably done, and eventually a mechanical You guys just lost drive in the final couple of laps of the race. So you were in the car for an hour and 15 minutes, and the last stint was 55 minutes of green. Your longest race had been 45 minutes. It's hot there. How was that?
Yeah, this was definitely something I was looking at going into the weekend as something that was going to be a challenge. It really wasn't as bad as I thought it would have been. The car was fairly comfortable, and I had to switch on the AC during yellows at times. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. There's definitely improvements that can be made in just the comfort. But it's part of it. Just I'd done a lot of sim training with just running long stints. That's one of the things that I think the sim is great for, whereas sometimes it's not able to replicate the specific feeling of a car, but just doing long runs, running in traffic, stuff like that. I think it's great for us. So I did plenty of time doing that. And really it was, I just got out of the car really, disappointed with the mechanical that happened, obviously, but I wasn't really too worn out. Whereas I've had plenty of Formula car races where I've gotten out of the car pretty beat up. So, I think we've got a pretty good starting point, on that aspect.
Okay. So what's next?
Well, right now I'm out of the car for a little while, at least as planned. We'll be back in the Michelin Pilot Challenge with, Sabok Simpson Motorsports at Mid-Ohio. That is, I believe, early June. I want to say, is that the 7th through the 9th?
Yep.
So that's the next time we're planning to be on track, but hopefully we can get some testing in, and maybe, do another race event if things fall into place. But we're just going to play the cards as they fall, and we'll see where we're at from there.
And if new budget falls out of the sky for an Indianapolis partner, would you do the USF Pro 2000 race during the Indy Grand Prix?
I don't see that as much of a question. Of course, I'd get in the car anytime it's available. Yeah, I'd love to get back in a Formula car for sure. And obviously Indianapolis, I've grown up here my whole life. It's such a special race to me. I'd love to get the opportunity to do that. Budget is a very limiting factor there, especially when we've got some good things rolling on the sports car side, and we're trying to use our budget wisely to be able to make the most of those opportunities. But if the opportunity arises, I would love to get back in the car in Maine, Indianapolis.
And what we have learned, or what his manager has learned, that there are more opportunities in sports car racing. They're financially, it's a better place to be. And we'll kind of just leave it at that. All right, Jackson, well done. Take your stuff with you this weekend. Maybe you'll get in a sports car at Thermal as well. So we'll be up there for the IndyCar weekend. Coming up next, we will see what we missed. We'll check into some late tweets and more. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is David Malukas, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, final segment. A few more Twitter questions from Lynn, formerly the Spurs fan. What's up with the CGR in trouble because of St. Pete? Does anyone know that the greatest driver of our generation is over 20 at the track? Alex did amazing to get sixth, but he was eighth last year. CGR only won one race before Marcus Gift. I think it's too early to really say that there's big concerns about Ganassi. They weren't awesome at St. Pete. Let's give it a couple of more. I suspect they're going to be there. I know they went to five cars, and that's something we're looking at, but I'm not ready to say that that is going to be an issue. Three or four more weekends, then maybe we talk about it if they're not going great. Chad Bunch, I feel like there could be a lot of crash damage this weekend since no points at stake or team owners really looking forward to this race. It's a good question. Yeah, I think they're hoping their driver is smart on this, but they'd also like to pick up the extra cash. If you got a chance to win, it might be let's go for it. And Mac loves motorsport. Will they share the purse with the crew? Yeah, they have no choice, as we talked about. We're out of time. We'll see you next Tuesday night, 7 until 9. Thanks for joining us on Trackside.